Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Veterans in Ag podcast, brought to you by AGD Consulting. I'm your host, Mike DeSop, and here we explore the stories and insights from the military veteran and supporter communities who are leading the way for vets in agribusiness, ag tech, and agripreneurship. We swap stories, talk ag, and show how the grassroots nature of the ag community can be a natural fit for the military veteran. Today's guest is James Triplett, Army veteran, youth pastor, former diesel mechanic, and now co-head of a dynamic regenerative farm in Mississippi. James isn't here to play it safe. He's here to talk about what it really means to hit rock bottom and climb back out with purpose. From surviving suicidal ideation to managing 800 acres of rotationally grazed livestock in Mississippi, his story is proof that healing can happen on the land, but only if you're willing to work at it. As James says, quote, "I'm not chasing my dreams. I'm walking in my purpose." In this episode, you'll hear how James went from rock bottom to running Etta Hills Farm alongside the son of regenerative ag specialist, Dr. Alan Williams. We dig into soil, business, faith, and why teaching agriculture to kids might be one of the most powerful things we can do for the next generation. Let's get into it.
So I grew up in Ware, Mississippi, very small town. It was a football town. Many of you may know some individuals like Roy Oswalt. Went to the same school as Roy Oswalt, who was a Major League Baseball player. One of the guys named DeCenzo Miller, he was very well known at Mississippi State. And Dennis McKinley and Alvin McKinley, people like that, that went on to professional football and baseball. So grew up in that town, football bred. I was a football star and track star. In Ware, Mississippi, 1A school, probably during the time the population there was probably about 1,000 people. Now, today is less than 500, but still has my heart. I live in Starkville, Mississippi. So I came back to Starkville when I got out of the military. I was Army, I was United States Army. And I did a stint of 3 years, a little bit of 3 years or more, and I was medically discharged. So being medically discharged kind of did something to me because I thought that this was going to be my life. This was where I was going to retire from. But God always has a ram in the bush, as I would say. So, of course, I'm married. Me and my wife have been married now 17 years, and I have 3 children. So agriculture has always been a thing for me. I've always liked outside. From just a little boy, you know, my grandfather, it wasn't necessarily a farm per se, like you got this large acreage of farm and you out there with cattle and things like that. But we had the garden. We had the chickens, we had the pigs, and we had everything that we need just dealing with, you know, just when there was times where I would go to my grandfather's house, and that's just where I fell in love with being outside, nature. Of course, once I got older, you know, when you get older and you start having girlfriends and things like that, you kind of get away from it, but agriculture has always been my passion, and I went back to school. I got an ag business degree in it because I'm a businessman, but I still like getting my hands dirty. So that's just the stint of it. You know, I don't want to bore anybody with my background. I did spend 13 years working as a diesel mechanic at a coal mine because I got off track of what I really love. But thank God now opportunities have opened up for me and my business partners to do what we love to do, and that's in agriculture.
Got it. There's a couple of things I want to sort of pull out from that description. That was great. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Any just curious reasons why you think that that town might have gone from 1,000 down to 500?
The economy. So, you know, the thing is, I mean, like all things, politics, The coal mine that was in Choctaw County, which Ware resides in that county, is a big deal. It's a big job. And with that job, was bringing other things. But when you have city officials and everybody just kind of not agreeing, it didn't pull in the other jobs that wanted to come there. And so when those jobs didn't land there, people such as myself and my classmate, my peers, and other people, they left. They either migrated to Starkville, which is the next, it's the college town, which is about 30 minutes away. So they migrated there, and then some just went on and started a family, in different states and different cities. A lot of the surrounding cities did pull away from where and gathered some of those individuals, but that's what happened. It was because of the economy and it just wasn't no jobs. And when the opportunity was there to bring the jobs, it didn't happen. Not trying to blame nobody or call out no names. It just didn't happen. And I think a lot of people are kind of regretting it now when they see the town the way it is. Being such a profound town, especially we held the state record for the most championships in football.
Was that the same coal mine where you spent 13 years as a diesel mechanic? Okay. And
Surface mining.
where did that fall in before or after your time in the army?
Yeah, this was after my time in the army.
Okay.
So, like I said, when I got out of the military, everything happened so fast. The way things happened, I really had poor leadership, and I'm not blaming them. Just God, again, God has a ram in the bush. So, when I got out, I was not planning to move back to Mississippi. I did not want to move back to Mississippi. I was like, Mississippi has to be the last place that I'm going to go. But everything was such a rush. And if I didn't move quickly, I wasn't going to have a place to stay because I was trying to go to Dallas, Fort Worth, Texas, because that's where I was like, if I'm going to go anywhere, I'm a truck driver in the Army, which I didn't do truck driving things. So I was like, hey, I'm going to go to Dallas, but I ended up had to be forced back to Mississippi. I say forced back. I had to make a decision to come back to Mississippi with just me and my wife, and fell in a very deep, dark place. Just in my life, it's called failure to adapt, PTSD. Things just kind of got dark and cloudy for me, and it was just at a time in my life where I needed income now, and I didn't know which way to go, and didn't have no leadership, didn't have no guidance when I was out, felt like I was alone. So the coal mine came up. There was an opportunity to go out there and be a truck driver at the coal mine. Next thing you know, 13 years later, I look up. I mean, hey, I'm grateful for that opportunity, but it wasn't something that I just wanted to do. I just know I needed money to take care of my household.
Was that place that you found yourself, did that have anything to do with the medical things you were dealing with as you were being discharged from the army?
Yeah, it did, man. Losing loved ones that I really grew close with in the army, watching it with my own eyes, things like that. Yeah, it plays with your mental. And so you kind of when you don't have the necessary tools to navigate that. Or, it's not to say that there wasn't nobody. It was people out there that would help you, but I didn't have the resources at the time to get it. And I have to take accountability too, because I wasn't looking for the resources either. So, and it played a great deal on my mental. So I started facing some problems when it came to just tempers and things like that. So, yeah, it did.
Yeah. I've lost more Marines since I've been out from suicide than I ever did in combat. And I'm wondering if, the Marines that you experienced loss with were a result of suicide or if these were combat related
Yeah, some of them
deaths.
was comeback related,
Yeah.
and then I've also lost friends due to suicide. Failure to adapt. That's what, that's what they call it. with you, and you asking the question like, "Dang, could I have done something?" You
Yeah.
know, or yeah. So it gets rough sometimes, you know, even when you talk about it, it gets rough. But I like helping other people. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so two or three Marines who were in my platoon in between deployments, one or two after that. The one that hit the hardest was my last couple years in the Marine Corps. I was an instructor at the infantry officer course in Quantico, and the executive officer or the second in command of the school, we crossed paths. We were at the school for probably about a year and a half or so at the time before I moved on from there. And you always sort of get inklings from people the longer that you spend with them that on the surface everything seemed fine, right? You could always sort of tell that alcohol might be a bit of an issue, but you don't really know all the details. Aside from that, he was, combat veteran, decorated, a great tactical instructor, married, two kids. And this is probably a couple of years ago now. Got a call from some of the other guys that I served with that said that, his wife found him in his apartment killed. You don't ever know the things that go on in someone's life that are not, publicly known. But still, you just sort of go, how,
Wow.
what sort of thought process is that he can end up at a place after all he's been through that the world would be better without him?
Yeah.
And it's, those are tough, man.
Yeah. And Mike, that's what I dealt with. Suicidal. Facing the moment where hey, I'll help somebody, hopefully. But you out, you drinking, I became an alcoholic. I drunk very heavy. And that does no good when you're already dealing with some of the things that you're dealing with. You're losing friends. And so I got to the point where I had the gun and I had it to my head. And I'm thankful for my wife today. I'm thankful for her today because had she not stepped in, had she not came home, I was inches away from ending my own life. I'll never forget just her corralling me. Just she came in and just like hugged me, and I'll never forget. But that's all I needed. The hug that she, and I'm not saying that she, but
No, I know.
when it happened, it was like, wow, I just want to feel loved. I just want to feel like I'm needed. And that moment, it changed my life. And then I started seeking help. It didn't change overnight, but I started seeking help. And I'm thankful today, man, that I'm here. And my heart is for veterans. I love my veterans. I love my friends. I don't care what part you serve in. I have a strong passion for them because it's a sacrifice. And I think a lot of people, like you said, they don't see the underlayers of what people really go through.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. I've never heard anybody talk about it as or describe it as under layers. And I think that's probably right because it implies that there's, well, certainly that it's underneath, but that also that there's many of them, or there can be many of them, right? And just because you're seeing one or you're not seeing another doesn't mean that there are not other layers there that are being masked or hidden or not being shared with you. And just veterans being who they are, sometimes it takes time and trust and reputation and shared experiences to begin to peel back
Back the
those to
layers.
figure out the one where the thorn actually is.
And you said it. You said it, man. Trust. You have to get to that place where you can build trust with that individual before you can even start talking. Because even when I went to forget the name of the AAU, alcohol,
AA, Alcoholics Anonymous.
so even when I went there and I remember snapping out. I spazzed out on the instructor, and this is because I didn't trust you, but eventually they put me with someone and they worked with me, and I remember gaining her trust, and right now she's still my therapist right to this day.
That's
Right
awesome.
to this day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was
And I
it
still seek counseling because I realize we need it. And it doesn't
right.
matter if you feel fine or not, we still need it.
Right. Was it from that point that you started to try to find purpose again in agriculture?
Yeah, well, I was just trying to find purpose, period.
Okay.
And I started asking God, what is it that you've called me to do? I wanted to find myself, and my wife was always in church. She would pray for me, and I find the first thing I must say, I accepted my calling into the ministry. So the church that I serve at now, I'm also a youth pastor there. Because how I grew up, not I love my father today. My father, me and my father have a great relationship, but there was things that where I didn't have my father. So a lot of those PTSD symptoms came from my childhood. And I didn't realize that until talking to my therapist. So it just added on to it when you entered into the military. But I wanted to define my purpose. Where God, where did you want me to be? And how do you want me to do it? And I realized that even when I was a young boy in the fourth grade, the teacher would go around the class. The teacher went around, Miss Miller, her name was Miss Miller, and she went around the
Funny how those teachers
classroom.
stick with us sometimes.
Yeah. And she asked the class, everybody just stand up and tell the class what you want to be when you grow up. And my last name is Triplett, right? So I'm the last one. And it got around to me, and I stood up in the fourth grade, and I just yelled, and I said, I want to be a preacher when I grow up. Whole class laughed at me, say, sit down, preachers don't make money, but I knew, I remember me saying that, and I was an innocent child then. And so that bled over into my adulthood, and I started finding my purpose. And as I got in the word, and as I got into the church, I got involved, I started preaching, and man, people just gravitated to the things and how I would present the word, and I found my purpose in helping people. That was it. My purpose is helping people come out of dark situations. And that's the overall objective of my purpose. And so agriculture kind of came on because it's a part of my life too. So it came on. So I don't like to tell people that I'm chasing my dreams. I'm not chasing my dreams. I'm walking in my purpose. Because when I'm chasing my dreams, I miss things. But when I walk in my purpose, I get to take my time and not figure out, but I get to take my time and see what it is God has planted at that moment for me to handle at that moment. So I like walking in my purpose instead of chasing my dreams.
Yeah, I just wrote that down. I haven't heard that before, but it makes a lot of sense when you think about it in those contexts, right? It implies intentionality. It implies a slower pace. It certainly implies with meaning. I like that. I like that. So how did that work in walking through your past or your purpose as a youth pastor? How did that begin to start to take on agricultural hues?
Well, so 2019, like I said, I've always knew I was going to be in business. I knew it. So I'm a mama's boy. So in 2019, July the 30th of 2019, roughly 3:54 p.m., I get a phone call. It was the worst phone call that an oldest child could have ever received. And that was because my mom had just passed away. And this is me leading up to agriculture.
Yeah, sure.
So my mom passed away, and she was 49 years old in 2019, 49. Her birthday was August the 30th. So she was planning this big party. She was gonna have an all-white party. And on her birthday, August the 30th of 2019. And I started Well, my mom died of congestive heart failure. And then all these things was present, and people was coming, and he was saying things God was ready for. And I was like, no. I can't process that. My mom was 49. And so I went home, I went to her house, and my mom didn't have no insurance. So I'm the oldest, and I had to spend $10,000 of my personal money. Thank God for my church family and my family that help give, but the cost of her funeral was 10,000. And that took away from me and my family. I do it again because that's my mom. So that's why I got into insurance. But I'm reminded that God spoke to me. And I was always an investor, but he spoke to me. He spoke to my heart. And it goes back, is more people that's just like your mom. So I started my business, and I started my insurance business in 2019. Started in 2019. And I learned it. I mastered it. I made money doing it. But that wasn't my overall purpose. But then I was like, I felt empty because I'm like, okay, I'm helping all these people, but they're not getting it. So I'm saying is, okay, if this kind of like helped get my mom to her grave, what was the preventive measures? Because we talk about PPE, we talk about being preventive maintenance. What could have happened? And so I live next door to Dr. Allen Williams. And I remember going to Soil Health Academy before my mom passed away. I remember going to Soil Health Academy. I remember talking to him and talking to Chris William, who's my business partner. I remember talking to them, and I remember those little seeds that they were planting me, but it didn't take root at the time. So I was like, wait a minute, it's the food that we're eating. So that's when I hone in to what we're eating and where we're getting it from. And I realized my mom was low income, low socioeconomics. In her household, it was junk food. It was food that was filled with a lot of chemicals. And so I was like, this is it. So that's when I really dug in and I was like, I go back to like, this is what I went to school for, ag business. So I'm back here, I'm back here. And that goes me walking in my purpose. That goes me walking in my purpose. And everything deals with Bible. And how are we supposed to take care and be create caretakers of creation with the soil and with our bodies?
You said Chris Williams is your business partner? Is Chris related to Alan?
That's Alan's son.
Got it. Okay.
And he's younger than me, but before I knew Alan Williams, I knew Chris Williams.
Got it. Got it. Have you been able to figure out why your mom was denied so many times after all those prescription medicines? What you got?
It hurt my heart when I found out. So mom didn't have no income. She didn't have no income. And since she didn't have no income, somebody filed her taxes. And when they filed her taxes, they filed them incomplete. I mean, they filed them incorrectly to get her more money. So I don't know if she agreed to that or not. But when the IRS, when they looked at that, it showed that she had income coming in. So her taxes being filed illegally caused her to be denied Medicare, Medicaid. I found it out. I wasn't going to stop until I found out. Yeah. So that was the main reason why she was denied.
Are there things about your current insurance business that are structured in such a way that can prevent things like that or attempt to prevent things like that from happening?
Absolutely. Now I deal with I don't write anymore per se. I will write certain people. I will write because I'm so tied up with regenerative, I mean radically regenerative or Eddie Hills Farms, but I do consult. And my business, that's how I get, that's how I'm gonna get you. I'm gonna consult with you. I'm not trying to sell you anything. I'm not trying to put you on anything, because if I can consult with you and give you the education, I give you the education, and what you do with the education is going to be upon you. I'm not going to let you leave without having somebody that's going to take real good care of you. So I have individuals like Rob Sevelia or Jerron Ross, one of my partners that are in insurance, that all right, once you make up your mind what you want to do, I can hand you off to them and they can take care of you and put you on the right plans. Yeah, so consultation and education is very important.
And is Etta Hill's farm related to your mother?
Yes, talking about as far as why I do what I do.
Or is was your mother's name Etta? Where did the name come from?
So Etta Hills comes from Dr. Alan William and Chris.
Okay.
Well, Dr. Alan Williams, Chris. Etta is a city, and
Okay.
so Etta and our farm is one of the, we have one of the highest points in Mississippi, one of the
Okay.
highest points, one of the highest elevations. So it's a bunch of hills. So the city is Etta. And we
Got
have
it.
a bunch of hills, so it's
Got it.
called Etta Hills.
How did you said you knew Chris long before you knew Alan? Was it just the shared fence line where you and Chris became
Yeah,
friends,
so
neighbors?
Dr. Allen, I live next door to Dr. Allen. And me living next door to Dr. Allen, Chris was maybe 14 years old,
Okay.
and Chris would come to my house just about every day. He would come to my house about every day, and he became a little brother to me. Dr. Allen, I didn't know what Dr. Allen did. All I knew, he traveled a lot. Very nice guy. He traveled a lot. I didn't know what he done. But me and Chris became close because I became a big brother to him, and he was like a little brother to me. And we would be together there, come and help me if I had an issue. I help him. And, you know, he knew I was a mechanic, and he was just so intrigued. He was a firefighter, so that's how it, that's how that relationship grew. We just became real close knit. And he graduates, he goes to college, he gets a 4-year degree, and we started a gym. We first started a gym business together, but the opportunity came for us to run and start Etta Hills LLC, and the opportunity came last year. And that's where me and Chris started running Etta Hills Farms.
Got it. And is the farm on property that you own or acquired, or is it
Yeah,
Chris's and
it's
Alan's? Tell me
yes.
about that.
So Dr. Allen, who's our partner, which that's just Chris' dad, and he's like a father to me. It's on 800 acres, and so he give me and Chris the authority and the rights to be co-owners of the farm
Got it.
and run it just like it's ours.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, a blessing. I'm
Yeah.
so thankful for him that he entrusted Chris and myself to do this. And it's been great. We've grown substantially.
What has your education process been like in regenerative agriculture, such that you're now at a place where you can manage 800 acres in a regenerative way? How have you gone through that education process?
Oh, every time that I'm with Alan Williams, it is like me soaking up. I'm like a sponge. And I'm not even asking. It's just the knowledge that he pours out of 40 plus years of being who he is, and even with Chris. So one thing that I've learned is everything starts with the soil. Everything from even us, it starts with the soil. And throughout this process, and it's been you know, even before we took over that, you know, I've been with him and learning, you know, so this has been over a course of since 2017.
Okay. Okay.
It's 8 years now, 8 years of
Okay.
learning the process, and I still haven't learned everything yet. You know, this man can go out there and just name off Like there's nothing, you know, and I'm like, dang, I can't wait to get there, but I gotta be patient.
What kind of practices, regenerative practices, are you all employing at Etta Hills?
So we do grass fed, of course, grass fed, grass finished beef. So we do rotational grazing daily. Right now we're up to 3,000 land hens. That's on a daily rotation. We're up to 100 piglets, pigs. That's on rotational grazing. We also will have soon back on the farm. We had to move our cattle farms to cattle to another farm, but we'll have 60 here coming up in a few weeks back on the land that we'll implement in that rotation because they are very important to have on the land. And then also we have broilers and we have our sheep. So we have several different enterprises, along with turkeys and along with ducks and geese that we implement into the rotational grazing because each and every last one of them bring a significance to the soil and what we're trying to do. So we don't call ourselves farmers of animals, we're farmers of the soil. If we can create healthy soil, we can create healthy living, healthy animals, a healthy environment.
So for those listeners who are, you know, maybe not as familiar with this as you and I are, James, explain that sort of sequence of animals, if you will, and why they move in certain ways, and why you put certain animals after others, and why you rotate anyway.
Yeah, because when we look at so we look at regenerative agriculture and what it is. And so with understanding ag, they have a principle, which is called the 634 principle. And so the very first thing is we have to know our context. And with that, with knowing your context, you also got to understand with these animals, each that's diversity. So with knowing which one does what, and so if we look at the impact that they bring. So let's say, for instance, chicken. Of course, chickens are a lot lighter than a cow, right? But chickens come and they scratch the surface. And so when a chicken comes along and they're scratching the surface, and also what else are they doing? They're eating, they're pooping, and they're urinating. They're doing things, but they're putting so much nitrogen in that soil, and they're also opening up additional seed banks that are there. And so we're using these chickens to open up those seed banks to give life to that place where it's not so much impact where they're really disrupting the soil underneath. Of course, now if you leave them there long enough, of course they're gonna rip it to pieces. So that's why we move them daily so they can get that impact. We get that impact on there, and so once we move them on, we may bring the cows. We can bring the cows behind. But cows have bigger hooves, right? And so the disruption there is there, boom, they're hitting that impact. But also what's coming out the back end of that cow. You know, you have the suffer, you have everything that's not so much stronger than the chickens, but what's coming out, it just brings life there. But also you have when you see a field full of cows, you have the birds that's coming, you have the bugs that's coming. And so you have all this biodiversity that's coming in that's feeding the soil what it needs to open up those additional seed banks so we can create life below the soil. And we do it in that method right there because we're creating life. That's what we're doing. Well, we're not creating it. We're helping life.
You are facilitating it in a naturally in natural way.
Right, exactly. In a natural way.
I'm not familiar with this 634 principle. Can you just can you describe that?
With the 634 principles, it's a principle that it works no matter what farm it is. No matter what type of farming you're doing. And so with this 634 principle, you have six principles of soil health, right? You have six principles of soil health, and then you have what they call the three rules of adaptive stewardship. That's the three, right? And then the four is you have the four ecosystems processes, right? And that the four ecosystem process is the energy, the water, the minerals, and the diversity. And so how these principles, if you implement these principles, that's how we create good, healthy soil. And so, but the first thing that we always tell you with the six principles is number one, when we're going to any farm, it doesn't matter what you're going to put on there. The first thing that we're going to look at is your context. And what the context means, it doesn't necessarily just mean we're out there looking at your land. We're going to look at your market. We're going to see what type of market do you have. We got to look at your surrounding people. Who's interested in what you have to offer? Because we can't say put cows on your land when you're 4 or 5 hours and you don't have transportation to get your cows to a barn, or you don't have the meat market. You know what I mean? So we got to look at the context of the farm or what you're trying to do. And once we figure out the context, once we figure out the true cost, because we don't need farmers spending money that they do not have. Because
Absolutely.
our job is to help farmers save money. Because did you know that farmers' suicide rate is at an all-time high?
Did. I think it's actually higher than the veteran community right now.
It is.
Yeah.
It is.
What sort of challenges have you encountered through this educational and management journey in the ag space?
Challenges come daily. That's why you got to be adaptive. And that's why we call it adaptive. You got to be able to adapt. So, yes, challenges do come on a daily basis. When what happens when your freezer goes out? You know, what happened if you don't properly budget that and your freezer go out and now you got a $4,000 bill? Or what happens when a storm comes and you're not prepped for that? So we face challenges like that, and we're not going to hold anything back. But that's why we're always prepping. We're always you got to always look forward, and some stuff is going to catch us off guard. Some stuff is just going to catch, like a freezer going out. We can prep for it, but some things are going to catch us off guard. So when we look at challenges, challenges do come. Fortunately, we have wonderful individual that works for us. And so that hasn't been such a challenge there, just getting people to work for you. I know that can be a challenge in some areas, but that hasn't been a challenge. Some of our challenges have been preventive maintenance. You know, that's some of the things that we've been challenged with. And
Say
I say
more.
freezer. Go ahead.
Like freezers
Like
or chicken
freezers going
waters.
out. Yeah, freezers going.
You said people work for you. Are you and Chris out there moving these animals daily, or do you have folks that do that for you?
So when Chris and I first started, it was me and Chris, but we realized that the vision was bigger. The vision was bigger. So we have a wonderful livestock manager. Her name is Taylor. Taylor is wonderful with the animals. And then we have some associates. We have Talon, we have Nick, we have Antonio, we have college students, Noah. We have a few individuals that come out there.
Got it.
Is three full time and a couple part times. So, but they love what they do, and so they see the vision as well. So now Chris and I are more on the business side. We're more on the business side now because we understand that regenerative agriculture is needed, and so there's a lot of young people who are not into farming. And so that's where Chris and I have implemented the GROW program. It's called GROW, Global Regenerative Outreach Through Wisdom. And so that's a curriculum that Chris and I have built. And we're implementing this in school systems so we can attract more young people. Because remember, I said that is a challenge for some farmers. And so now we can, if we can grab these kids that are interested in agriculture at a young age and teach them, you know, the truth about farming and how do I make money? You know, how do I make money in this? Because we want to make money. So
Yeah.
how do I do that?
Before you and I started recording, you'd mentioned that I think later this week you're headed down to San Antonio to do some work with a school.
Exactly.
Is it about this program?
It is. It's
Got it.
about this program. So we're meeting with it's a Catholic school that's in San Antonio right now. I guess I couldn't say the name of it right now,
No,
but
no, understood.
it's one of the largest Catholic schools that's in San Antonio. Has over 35 schools. And so we're going down to meet with the officials there. We're going to spend the day with them there, and we're just going to look over some things, look at what they have, and hopefully we come to the conclusion that they like this curriculum, which they are very interested in it, and they will be one of the first ones who adopts this curriculum and
Got it.
enforce it starting in, we're praying that they started in the 25-26 school year.
Interesting. Okay. And so if this implementation process goes well, then there's expansion into school systems across the
All over.
state or beyond potentially.
Yes.
Okay. When you and Chris, when Alan first said, okay, James, Chris, you guys got it. Let's put these 800 acres into practice, regenerative practice now. And you guys started to put these principles contextually organized down in your farm and started to rotate and manage. What was one of the hardest things to get right out of the gate?
Oh man, right out of the gate was learning how to do it, especially moving, understanding like, okay, we're actually doing this now. Mississippi, we get a lot of rain, and we had no soil infiltration. I mean, no water infiltration. I said soil, no water infiltration. So we was running into problems daily with our chickens being flooded. They're in water, like, and getting the maintenance right with the housings and making sure they delay rate went down. So, we was already okay, we started selling eggs to some grocery stores, well, like a couple grocery stores, and we had customers. But what happens when your lay rate stops? And you're like, what the heck just happened?
Because the chickens are swimming now.
Well, they're under so much stress. And so we gotta learn how to deal with the stress of the animals, how to make them relax, and what do we feed them. And so we had to come in and had some advice on, because Dr. Allen is not there. He's
Right.
traveling all over the world,
Right.
and
Right.
he's not just easy accessible because he's in meetings all day long. So we have to figure this thing out. How do we get these chickens back laying in? Well, piglets, last year, we only had like 12 pigs. That's all we had. You couldn't afford to lose, and you got people calling you and screaming at you, like, hey, do you have any more of your bacon? We want more of your bacon. And they're like, oh my God. And so that was one of the things of trying to learn, like, okay, we gotta plan this thing out. It's proper planning. We had to learn how to plan this out. And at the moment, it was just me and Chris. And mind you, I'm 2 hours away from the farm. So Chris moves up. He lives on the farm now. He has a house and everything on the farm now. But at the time, we face stress. And I'm not gonna, I can't lie to nobody. Expenses was hitting us out the wazoo. We was in a bad situation. And the situation was because of previous management. There was previous management, but we don't call any names. But it had got rough, and it got scary. And the reason I say it got scary was because of me and Chris, because we didn't want to fail. We did not want to fail at this, and so we realized instantly we got a plan. We got to write out a plan. And so we started planning things. We put our heads together. We both college students put our head together and like, hey man, we're gonna have to put some of this sense to work. And
Because two college kids with their heads together with degrees, sometimes that'll get you some results.
sometimes it will, man.
How did you solve the water infiltration rate and the chicken stress levels?
Well, one of the things was we was a big problem to ourselves because you got a 1,000 birdhouse unit, And when you got leakage that's coming from something that you've done or you haven't done,
Got it.
then you got to clean that problem up yourself. So a lot of that was just on us. A lot of that was just on us. And so we fixed those issues, and it took money to fix those issues. And then with the lay rate, we found out that a lot of that was on us as well. And that was because of the water issue. And then it came back. We had to mix their feed up a little bit. We do feed non-GMO so they can get the amino acids, but that ain't what they just strictly eat off of course. We realized that, hey, there's a little secret that's called MASH. So we mix a little water into their feed, and boom, you know, and next thing you know, the lay rate is back up. It's back up. We had dogs that was we had Kangals that was with us, but those Kangals kept getting out, and so we lost some birds through predators. And so things like that. And so we just had to learn, okay, how do we eliminate our own problems? And that's what we had to do, eliminate our own problems.
Were chickens where you started?
Chicken and sheep was what we
Okay.
had the most of.
Okay.
We did have, we had cattle, but we had to move the cattle off the land so that we could properly get it to the place, because Etta Hills Farm was bare land. Etta Hills Farm didn't even have enough grass on there out of 800 acres to really feed the cattle. So it
Right.
was bare soil. It was in terrible condition. And if you see, when you see Etta today, you can be like, whoa. And we show you pictures, you'd be like, no way.
I've seen
No
it.
way. Yeah. 3 years ago, we did a tour out there. 3 years ago, we did a tour. We had a big event on the farm, and the trail that we had, you know, you really had to go real slow because all the dust that was because of the bare soil. But today, you don't see that.
That's, yeah, this idea of sort of re-greening areas with animals instead of in the absence of them. I mean, Alan Savory talks about this or has been talking about desertification for decades. And it's just, I think we're finally starting to come back around to this idea that animals are not the problem. In fact, they're a big part of the solution. And this whole campaign to vilify them, I think, is starting to show its poor form, if you will. You know, and agricultural practitioners who have done this have always known that it was a farce in a lot of ways. And I think the rest of the folks are finally saying, I'd rather have an actual animal to eat rather than chemically processed and synthetically grown fake animal. So speaking of animals, I noticed from your site, you guys are you're selling a bunch of animal protein. I'm curious how you're handling processing.
Yeah, so we use a processors will make or break you.
I don't need numbers here. I'm just trying to get a sense of, as a percent of your of Etta Farms' overall business, does a majority of that revenue come from the sale of your animal proteins, or does it
Yes.
come through other means?
Sales of our protein. That's it. In which we are creating other avenues, because you know, just learning in business, you want to keep growing, and but you can't be a jack of all trade and a master of none. So we have to get our protein to where it's self-sustainable. You know, it can sustain itself without you having to push it as much no more. So we are creating those residuals coming in month in. So we have some strategies that, you know, we don't mind consulting with. We don't mind helping nobody out, but we have built a marketing strategy thanks to Swanson. We have another partner. His name is Wayne Swanson, and he's a great marketing guru. So we've sat down with him. He's given us some consultation, and it has helped us tremendously. So we're not just a know-it-all be-all. We do look for consultation as well that's going to help us. And thanks to Wayne and That's because of Dr. Allen's contact, but sat down and got some great insight from him. So we're looking at now, once we really got this honed in, we're gonna look at other avenues to create income that comes in. But first, I say you gotta hone in on what's important first. And once you can get that self-sustainable, you can move. But trying to do too many things at once, it can cause stress.
Were you and Chris the sort of primary authors of this this Grow curriculum program?
Yeah, we are the founders of it. Chris and
Okay.
I, we had about 120 some kids that came on the farm for a school tour. And every last one of those children were excited. They wanted more. And it was at that moment that we was like, we got to do something. Every school that you, not every school, but most schools don't even have agriculture no more. So Chris and I was like, we got to do something. And we was brainstorming and was like, hey, actually Chris actually came up with the name. And I was like, dude, that's it. Hey, that's it. Global regenerative, we was talking about global because we want it all over. We want to impact the world. So that's
Right.
global regenerative outreach through wisdom.
And is part of this, or will part of this curriculum include time on a farm as like a
Yes.
practical application? Okay.
It's part of the curriculum will include time on the farm.
To maybe come full circle here, James. Where do you think military veterans fit at a Hill Farms, at a Hills Farm?
Yeah, so we're working on I haven't started my profile yet, but I'm gonna do it here real soon. It's called the Regen Vet.
Okay.
It's called the Regen Vet, the regenerative veteran,
Okay.
because there's so much peace that comes through farming that can help veterans in so many ways. Every time that I'm on the farm, every single time, I get this peace that comes over me, and it's something with nature. It's like you're mending with nature, and so. If I can get veterans that are interested and that can feel that peace that I feel, and with other veterans that I know that are in farming fields, but coming in without the fear of not knowing, and I can help them understand agriculture and just not say, I'm gonna, teach them and they're gonna be all good, but if I can give them a head start, and then they have somebody that they can depend on, because fortunately, Chris and I, we do have a lot of resources. And but those resources are not just limited to us, because we with Alan and Gabe Brown, those are the two most humble men I've ever met in my entire life. And they are an open book. They are an open book. So with that, everybody won't be able to get the Alan. Everybody won't be able to get the Gabe. But I look at the continuity. If I can, the continuity is James Tripplin and Chris Williams can touch them. And if we can get that knowledge into us, then how many more people are we going to help?
Right.
How many more veterans? And that's one of the things, even with Carbon Cowboys, with my great friend Peter Vick.
And James, or Carvin Cowboys.
Peter's my great friend. And we've talked several times about veteran coalitions and how do we help veterans. And so I know Peter has a passion for it. I know Dr. Allen has a passion for it. And hey, and Mike, I know that this is why you do what you do, and you have a heart. And so it's to tie in to helping as many veterans as we possibly can that wants to do this. And they feel like they have the support. Not just feel like it. I want to change that. Not feel like it, but they know. Because a lot of people are like, I want them to feel like they got support. Well, when they call on you, you can't answer. I want them to know that, hey, they have support here.
And with farms like yours and others that offer these practical application venues for military veterans as they're transitioning out, where they're looking at agriculture as a possibility, these become places for them to say, is this something I really want to do? Can I spend some time here in an internship or voluntary capacity as part of the Careers Bridge program or the Skills Bridge program or something, and give them a place where they can really start to figure out if this is for them? And the more of those that are available, and even better, the more of those that are available and organized in such a way that they become accessible to veterans before they even transition out, man, the better that process is, right? So that you don't experience some of the, you may not have experienced some of the things that you did on your way out. You know, maybe you find that purpose, or if these can help veterans find that purpose again sooner instead of struggling for so long, I gotta think it's worth a shot.
It is. And we're working on some things. I've talked to Dr. Allen already. Of course, we're working on some things to get veterans to where they can attend a Soil Health Academy through grants. And then Chris and I are working on a few things to where we can host veterans on the farm and, spend 2 or 3 days with veterans, having them out there, helping them, letting them see how we move the animals and why do we do what we do, and and just bringing them in and having an open book conversation with them and sitting down. So we're working that out, man.
That wraps up this episode of the Vets and Ag podcast. A big thanks to James Triplett for showing up with honesty, heart, and real vulnerability. His journey from depression and alcoholism to purpose and leadership on land is powerful. But just as importantly, it's his story, and that's something we want to be crystal clear about. Farming is not a magic cure. Not everyone finds peace with their hands in the soil, and that's okay. The truth is, both veterans and farmers face some of the highest suicide rates of any profession in this country. So while bringing the two together can be transformative for some, like James, it's not a guaranteed fix. It takes support, structure, mentorship, and honest conversations like this one. What James reminds us is that purpose isn't always found in the loud moments. Sometimes it's found in things like rotation plans, community outreach, and the stillness of doing something real every day. If you want to learn more about what James and his team are building at Etta Hills Farms, head over to ettahillsfarm.com. That's ettahillsfarm.com. Or find James directly on LinkedIn or Instagram at JamesStrip13.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Vets and Ag podcast, brought to you by AGD Consulting. If you enjoyed this episode and think other military veterans and supporters would benefit from these insights and stories, please give us a review and share on social media. You can also find previous episodes and learn more about AGD Consulting by visiting our website. Finally, if you have any recommendations of future guests who are military veterans or supporters leading the way in agribusiness, ag tech, or agripreneurship, please send them our way. I'm your host, Mike Bissau, and until next time, stay frosty.